I was also extremely pleased to be asked to speak at symposium, partly because I probably couldn't have afforded the trip this year, and it's really wonderful to be here. This group has a real gift for the small details, you know, the little things that make you feel really good, like balloons in your room. And it creates a spirit here that's really wonderful. So it's nice to be here and be part of it. It's nice to be taking home a limited edition mug for getting a few signatures. And I am the lady who took care of the seat. Really good preparation for a community organization. My sister once gave me the far side card that has the sheep standing up saying, you know, no, listen, we don't have to be the sheep. The topic that was given to me is how gay are the 90s. And the first time Dick said it to me, what popped into my head was Charles Dickens. It was the best of times. My next thought was, nah, it's neither. I would imagine that the best of times were back before heterosexism was invented. The 20,000 years we had before they figured out there was anything, that they thought there was anything wrong with us. And my feeling is that at least for people of European origin, the worst of times was probably the Inquisition, which was the time that the church and state got their act together and got unified and really did establish their control over the population of Europe, and did so by killing and torturing a lot of people. The usual estimate is 9 million. 85% of those were women who died for the crime of being skilled and independent and leaders. The men who died for the crime of not being masculine in the eyes of the church and state. And in fact, many died on the piles of sticks that were burned around the women when they were burned at the stakes, which is where the term faggot comes from. So, and then there was, of course, a repeat of that during the Holocaust in Germany. So that, in my opinion, is the worst of times for someone of European origin. For people of African and North and South American origin, my guess is that their worst times happened around the end of that period, too, because the Inquisition was 1300 to 1700. And, of course, the colonization of Africa and North and South America imported the methods of the Inquisition into those continents, and a hatred of strong women and men who don't fit the mold with them. Actually, there's a story one of the elders tells in Cape Breton that when the Jesuits first came to Nova Scotia, one of the first things they did was gather up the gay leadership, who were the gay men who were considered spiritual leaders, two-spirited. The word in Mi'kmaq is Bowowin. And apparently cut them up and fed them to dogs as a lesson. So this is not the worst of times, and it's not the best of times. Best of times, there's some best times back there, and hopefully there's, well, I know there's some best times coming. I would say that the time we're in right now is one of those times when you put one foot forward, and then you put the next foot forward, and then you put the next foot forward, and the next foot forward. And it's better this year than it was last year, and it's not as good as it's going to be next year. And the wonderful summary of history that David gave us yesterday from about 1650 to the present is the story of that, you know, one foot down and then the other and then the other and then the other. And we're moving forward. We're getting there. And this is the best time since the Inquisition, as far as I'm concerned, for us. Nova Scotia has human rights. And 6 months later, in New Brunswick, got human rights. And very soon, Maine's going to, right? And Portland has. Exciting things are happening just in the last year. I would say that the response that this community has made to AIDS is a model, an international model, for how a community can care for one another, build organizations to take care of its folks, and fight all at the same time, and how people can pull together across lines that divide. And we were talking this morning about how in the major cities here in the state, the AIDS organizations are now taking care of people from other communities that the virus is now hitting, and Halifax is getting ready to do that as well. It's not just, okay, we're going to take care of our own and that's an end of it. I think we've created a model that is being emulated internationally, and it's a really fine model. We are more visible than we've ever been, certainly in my lifetime, if you can kiss on L.A. law. You can kiss a lot of places you couldn't kiss before. And many of these portrayals are of normal people who do something else besides sex. Who do sex too. And who don't have green scales and purple horns and, you know, all of that. It's a different kind of visibility. We have Pride Days that are beginning to be officially declared. The mayor of New York walked with the gay lesbian group in the St. Patrick's Day Parade, which is wonderful. The new mayor of Toronto, who's right-wing in many ways, refused to kick off the annual fundraising campaign of the Salvation Army because of their homophobic stance. The United Church of Canada has stuck by its stand that ordination is open to gay and lesbian people, at least in theory, against masses of opposition. The Quakers, this side of the border, are marrying gay and lesbian couples, first time since 1150 that a Christian denomination has done that, one thing that the Inquisition took care of. We've moved from being a sin to being sick, to being understood as an oppression, i.e. it's not us. There's something wrong with the society we live in. There's also more and more real good straight people out there who care about these issues. It's gotten to the point where I feel that when those of us who do public speaking, etc., out speaking, one of the best things that can happen is for someone to stand up and say all those horrible homophobic things. Because that's what we're talking about. All those good people who didn't understand how bad it is leap up and defend you. I've had it happen on radio talk phone-in shows, right? I discovered later there was a 20-minute wait for this one particular phone-in show. We had 40 minutes of people saying we should all be shipped to Sable Island and we should all be imprisoned and we should all be dealt with and sent away and children won't be safe. And then after 40 minutes, there was 25 minutes of people calling in saying things like, I listened to CBC because I thought CBC listeners were intelligent. Or I was basically trucked behind this woman. So I was driving around the highway listening on my car radio and I couldn't stand it. I had to call and tell your guests that not all straight people think that way. She's been standing by the highway for 20 minutes. And that consistently happens. And the experience of being out in public now is one of getting 10 wonderful pieces of support for every bit of shit you get. At least that's my experience. I've had a few strangers call and say obscene things or walk up and say insulting things. For every one of them, I've had a dozen strangers walk up and say, my mother's 60 years old and she thinks she looks like a wonderful person. Oh, I never thought of that before. That's my favorite. Some of the things you said, I've never thought of before. Well, I didn't realize this was happening. Being out is that kind of experience these days. And all you have to do is read biographies of people who preceded us by half a generation, let alone a generation, to understand that wasn't always the case. And I'm not trying to belittle that there is risk involved, but There are people out there who are catching on that this is suggestive history. There are several reasons, I think, that we're in this good space. One of them is a great sadness to us, and that is AIDS. But it also pushed us kicking and screaming into a more visible position. And we've responded to that. Another reason is other liberation movements. Women, blacks, First Nations, disabled people are developing theory and models and understanding of what oppression is and what it means and how it functions and how you absorb it in your own head and start thinking those things of yourself. They've provided us with some of these models and some models of fighting that we've been able to also borrow and share. And I think above all, there's just so many wonderful people. People with real courage, people with amazing skills, and of course this room is a collection of such people. People with an amazing variety of skills. There are the people who do the political organizing, and there are the people who sit in front of their computers and write. There are the people who fundraise for buildings, and there are the people who sing. There's such a tremendous variety of skills. You know, there are people who do health care, there are people who do counseling, there are people who do everything, people who paint posters, people who lick stamps, people who stuff envelopes. There's a variety of skills that have been put to use in this liberation movement. It's just amazing. And I also want to say another word about outness, because I think it's just our most powerful political and organizing tool. And there are so many people who've taken the next step. I love that slogan. Because not everybody can be all out. Not everybody can have their face on television. Not everybody wants to upset their grandfather, you know, when he's 90. Not everybody, you know, there's lots of reasons. Not everybody can afford to lose custody of their kids, you know. But the take the next step slogan to me means you look around, you see what the next step is for you, and you take it. And hundreds, thousands of gay and lesbian people are doing that. And that's what makes all those good straight people understand that, you know, I'm your neighbor, I'm your sister, I'm your cousin, I'm your mother, I'm your friend, I'm your boss, you know? And I don't have green scales and purple hands. You're kidding me, Kate. And I really never attacked you in the bathroom, have I? After speaking at a labor conference, I heard about 6 months later that the rumor went around in the union. It was the Women's Committee of the Government Employees Union. The rumor had gone around that I'd told all the women wearing makeup that they had to leave and take it off before. But, you know, the people who heard the speech firsthand were coming up in droves saying, I have a lesbian daughter, what do I say to her? You know? I never thought of that. I didn't realize this was a union issue. I had no idea we should be putting a cause in like that. That's a benefit. I never even thought of it. Of course. So anyway, it's these kinds of, you know, little day-to-day shows of courage and taking the next step and using our skills that have moved us forward to this point. There have also been some disappointments. It isn't the best of times either. After our human rights legislation came through in October, we celebrated briefly, and then we just began to discover how they were going to make an end run around it. So, Ventric, would you like to just you should be able to celebrate for a few weeks. First of all, they, like in Nova Scotia, like in Ontario, although Gavin Ventric somehow avoided this, put in an opposite sex gender definition of spouse, along with our sexual orientation protection. And already, two women in Cape Breton, one sold a car to the other, and they've been forced to pay the tax, although they tried to resist it on the basis that spouses are opposite sex people, you know, regardless of that they're protected by sexual orientation. The federal people are running, as they are, to keep ahead of our new right-wing parties, the Western Reform Party and the Confederation of Regions Party, are still saying, okay, we'll give them sexual orientation as long as we can have a definition of the family. So you people who are still working on these kinds of things walk out. We didn't think of that. Well, we did think of it, but we didn't quite see the impact it was going to have. The other thing that's happening is a rapid separation of orientation from conduct. So they're saying, we're protecting you. You know, you can't help what you are. You're a gay or lesbian person. But just don't try and do anything as a gay or lesbian person. Like have sex, form a family, lobby, etc., because you're not protected. Granted. There's this separation. The church is really good at this, too. You know, love the sinner but not the sin kind of stuff. We're beginning to see that legally. Protect the orientation, but not the conduct. Watch out for that one, too. The third disappointment is that the Osmond Rights Commission, and I've just this past week discovered that this is happening across the country in Canada, is being starting to be firmer about which category you're covered under. And actually, in Nova Scotia, we pioneered this. We got our human rights on October the 18th, Persons Day, and because that was the day in 1915 that women were declared legally persons. Nice to get it on Persons Day. And then in January, two of us took the stand in a human rights tribunal case. A white PhD-educated male tried to publish a letter in our feminist lesbian newspaper, which has a women-only policy. And they refused him, and he went to the Human Rights Commission, and the Human Rights Commission took it right to the tribunal level, spending lots of money and resources, and dropping a couple of interesting and important racism cases along the way. And there were lots of lesbians on the stand during the Pandora, Pandora's the name of the paper, the Pandora Tribunal. Only two of us took the stand openly as lesbians to make the case that it's not safe for us to have our internal conversations and to speak our minds in the regular media and to talk about the kinds of things that do happen, messages on your message machine, that kind of thing. But that all of us, that we've published in Pandora and stated our opinions in Pandora, and of course nothing happened, all the dangerous nature. But we never got to give our testimony because the Human Rights Commission lawyer, who is an openly gay man, argued that because we're covered by sexual orientation, and this is a gender effect case, we have nothing to say about it. And the adjudicator ruled in his favor, and we were removed from the stand without giving our testimony. So watertight categories is another disappointing and dangerous bit of this to watch out for. That's one that doesn't, I guess, affect many men so much because there are many men in the community for whom sexual orientation is their experience of oppression. But for anyone who crisscrosses because of race or disability, mental or physical disability or religion or, and of course, automatically for lesbians, who are also women, anyone who's covered by any other category in the Human Rights Commission are going to be very affected by this if we don't fight it. So we need support in fighting that one. What we're actually hitting here is a lot of creativity, strange as it may sound, creativity on the right. As Ben said yesterday, isn't it just like a sex thing? You know, I'll move my notes. They move theirs. And we find it. That's what all can move. They sacrifice two pawns. But anyway, what we're seeing is some creativity, you know. We're fighting our fights and they're finding new ways to come at us. I was very interested in the workshop yesterday morning on some of the strategies that the right is using here because they're slightly different than ours. But I heard for the first time the expression wedge issues, which apparently on the right means using key issues like abortion, sexual orientation, and race as a wedge to get their whole picture of what family and society should look like into the political agenda. And what struck me about the image is that these are also the issues that divide us. And these are not only a wedge for them coming in, they're wedges that divide our community up as well. And I think there is some potential for divide and conquer if we're not fully aware of what they're doing. But in a different system anyway, we do have a habit of, you know, swing on gender lines, well, not gendered, sex lines. We're getting rid of gender, right?
sex lines, age lines, race lines. We don't have any trouble finding our own way into getting divided over these issues. And these are the things that the right can use. One thing that's always fascinated me about the right is how come they can see the connections among all these issues so easily and we can't? You know, they never have any doubt that it's all the same package. But on our side, we really have a lot of trouble understanding that. I've been working on, I wish Karen Salm were here, I'm sure a lot of people from the main group know her. Karen Salm said an important thing to me about 2 years ago. She writes novels from 4 to 8 o'clock in the morning. Lesbian mystery novels, and they're wonderful, I recommend them. I said, oh, I wish I had time to write. How many people get it? She said, you do. You know, get up 15 minutes early every morning and do it. Get it in. So for 2 years, I've been setting aside every Thursday night to write. And it's a wonderful experience. I mean, none of you may ever get to read this stuff, but it's been wonderful. And what I've been writing about and reading about, of course, and exploring is the relationship. My job, I teach community organizing and popular education and organizational development, fundraising, etc., out of a university extension department, which puts me in the Black community, the Mi'kmaq community, the disabled community. So I'm trying to write about the relationship of all those different forms of oppression. Actually, poverty is the main issue that I work on in my work. And it's getting more and more important to me that we on our side, begin to see the relationship among all of those things, because it's not a matter, in dealing with it inside our own community, it's not a matter of erasure. It's not a matter of saying, hey, we're all brothers and sisters, let's act like it. You know, what is this shit? Let's just do what we're supposed to do. That's erasure. And we can't do that. What we have to do is recognize and understand the differences and how they relate to one another and really understand in here that no one of those can be solved without the other. I'm going to just talk history here for a few minutes. History, archaeology, mythology, everything else. These are some of my favorite areas to read in. But they've helped to give me a bit of an understanding about how these issues fit together. around 3000 BCE, before the Common Era, so as not to always have Christ in our daily system, when male dominant societies were first emerging, war-centered societies were first emerging, if you picture what the challenges were for them, I do this with workshop groups, actually. I often put them in the feet of a male-dominant, war-centered society who's just conquered a society that doesn't have those values, that's peaceful and equal. And I tell them that in this generation, they're holding that other society down by force. But they want it to be in the next generation so that that group believes that these are the right things to do, right? So it's a value-changing exercise. And I send them off for 2 or 3 hours, and they all come back with the same thing. Wasn't that so cool? You know, well, it depends on who's in the group, right? But anyway, they always go through a process of, okay, you've got a society now that under, and you can start just about anywhere. You can answer this picture from anywhere. But let's answer from war. You've got a society that believes that it's possible and good to conquer the society next door. Men have a bit of an advantage in a war-making society because of mobility and physical strength, and because also of thousands of years of developing hunting skills. So you begin to have a male-dominant society, and then you get patrilineality. They count descent through the father, the fathers and sons. Well, that changes the whole nature of sexuality in this society. Because if you can't descend through mothers, it's not really all that difficult to know who the mother of the child is. But it's rather more difficult to know who the father is. So if you're going to have a strict patrilineality, you have to somehow control sexuality.
Women.
Both, I'd say, but particularly women. Because women's sexuality has to be owned as a possession. Therefore, the woman does too, who happens to have that sexuality. So you've got women becoming possessions, children becoming possessions, That gives rise to the concept of the land being a possession and slaves, you know, other people being possessions so that you have access to the labor, which you, male, have access to the labor, the reproductive capacity, the resources of the land. All of that comes with the concept of ownership. That means that sexuality gets moved from being something that is for pleasure and growth and satisfaction and celebration and sometimes with sacred meaning into a sign of conquest. You start getting conquest by penis. So that if this woman receives this man's penis, she becomes his property or his slave. She is conquered. So then, of course, you've got heterosexism. You know, what else could you have? Because a man who accepts that conquered relationship has just betrayed, he's a traitor to other males. He's given up that higher status. Or if he's raped as part of a conquest, he's no better than a woman. He is a woman. You know, he's become a possession of another man. Also, of course, racism becomes very obvious in that situation because you have to have an ideology that allows you to conquer and use another people, so they have to be less than you. So you have to find some kind of physical difference so you know who's who. And who's bigger and who's smaller and all of that. You also need, there's actually a second reason for heterosexism as applied to men, and that is going back full circle. You want men who can fight. And that means a male bonding that depends on institutions and goals and glory, not with another individual man. Because you want a man who can be fighting beside a comrade and he falls and it doesn't bother this man. He just goes straight forward and someone else steps into his place and he bonds the same way. So you get the kind of brotherhood that's characteristic of military units and monasteries. You know, where you don't have particular friends, right? You're bound to the goal and to the brotherhood. Likewise with women, although it's for a different reason, you don't want women to bond together because they just might rebel. They talk to each other. So you need women separated from one another as well, so that her whole orientation in the broader sense is towards that man and her children. So all of these things, right, they're all interlinked in such a tight fashion. One leads to the other. If you're going to have one, you have to have the other. Which is why when you read anthropology, you do find societies in transition. They're usually going somewhere. But you usually find these things in bunches in a society. And individuals, too. You know, like, there are individuals in transition, but still, there tends to be a package that people support war and the traditional family and anti-abortion and racism and, you know, comes together. It's all like a weaving. You know, you can't pull out one thread without pulling out all the others as well. And it seems to me that this is what we have to understand, both within our community and outside of it, because every time we act in a racist manner, every time we fail to consider people with access limitations, every time we fail to deal with the inequalities between men and women within and without our community, we're reinforcing heterosexism again. You know, treadmill. Somebody goes up, somebody goes down. Now this person fights to get up and this person goes down. It's that we have to break. This is harks back to the conversation that I seem to spend most of my life in the 70s in, which is the difference between reform and transformation. Reform is a victory, it makes a change, but it makes a change for a few people, and overall reinforces the whole picture of oppression. Transformation goes for the roots of the thing, like takes it apart, actually makes the changes. And easier said than done, right? It's very difficult to tell which you're engaged in.